With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and this is the audio version of From the Newsroom with Salem News reporters Paul Layton and Dustin Luca. And gentlemen, thank you so much for being patient and staying with us. Appreciate it.
Of course. How you doing? Thanks, Rick.
All right. We're good. Okay. We're going to start off with Paul. I guess I don't know if it's a surprise or not, but Paul Guansi, who stepped down from the city council in Beverly recently, and is well known throughout the North Shore, of course, a long time president of the council, I'm pretty sure I got that right, and he's decided to run for mayor against longtime mayor Mike Cahill. So what do you got on that, Paul?
Yes, it is. I think in some ways it is surprising because Paul has thought about running for mayor for a long time and never pulled the trigger. But in other ways, it's not, because he's been an obvious, you know, potential candidate. But it sets up the biggest mayor's race, the most competitive mayor's race in a long time, I would say. As you said, Guansi was on the city council for 20 years. He stepped down a couple of years ago. He didn't run for re-election, so he's been out for just 2 years. But he was city council president for 16 of those 20 years, meaning he was the top vote getter among the council or at-large candidates. So he's like what they would call a proven vote getter in Beverly, and of course, Cahill's been mayor for 10 years, and he was state representative for the city for 10 years. And so it's really the two, quote-unquote, most popular politicians in Beverly of the last, couple decades are going to be running for mayor. So it really sets up an interesting race.
Well, I think I read quotes from your article about each of them, each of the candidates, if you will, praising each other. So I wonder, what that means in the short run or the long run.
Yeah, no, that's a good question, and I'll be interested to see how it goes once they get into the campaigning later in the year. But they've always, gotten along. When Guansi was on the city council, he almost always, as far as I voted in favor of any of Cahill's proposals, and he even said that the mayor has done a good job. So I think his pitch is going to be more that, Cahill's been mayor for 10 years and it's just time to give somebody else a chance. But I don't know if there's been a lot of people in the city, it's hard to gauge exactly how many don't like all the development that's been going on, especially on Rantoul Street. There's been the problem with the Hall Whitaker bridge in Beverly has been shut down, and the Kernwood Bridge needs to be replaced. There's a lot of people upset about that. So we'll see. We'll see how vulnerable
Well,
is. And yeah,
one of those bridge deals has been projected to be completed in the next millennium sometime, isn't it? It's like a 1,000-year project.
No, that's what adds to the frustration. I mean, these are state bridges, and the state is responsible for the maintenance and repair and for building new ones and everything. So it's not directly the mayor's responsibility, mm-hmm. but, local officials do play a role, and they're pushing the state to do more. And, it's going to be years. They've gone back and forth with the timeline, but it will definitely be, one of the big issues in the race.
All right. Well, we slide over into Salem with Dustin Luca, and I guess a similar situation over there. Two popular civil servants, if not civil servants, but public officials familiar in the area running for mayor. Bring us up to speed on that one, Dustin.
Yeah. So the last time we talked, there were five people running for mayor. Now there's only two because they had the preliminary election last Tuesday that brought the field down to Dominic Pangallo and Neil Harrington, who are two very well-established people in Salem, one of which has, been kind of central to a lot of the progressive movement and kind of direction of the city for the last 10 years. And then the other one is the mayor for more than 20 years ago, who has remained in Salem while running Salisbury, but has still kind of kept his hand on the pulse of what's going on in Salem. So, whereas in Beverly, there's the question of whether you're going to have a mayoral change that could kind of change the direction of the city. Salem, we know we're going to have that change, and the questions becomes what path is that change going to reflect. So one of the things that I've been kind of looking at this past week is how the candidates all spend money on the race leading up to the election on the 28th. And interestingly enough, Neil Harrington and Dominic Pangallo, by an overwhelming long shot, led everybody else in the financing. And they're almost kind of evenly split. Like Dominic had a couple of like he was using a couple of consultants, whereas Neil went a little heavier on the press coverage and the signs and things like that. So one thing that's been really interesting is people have been having some difficulty placing what the race itself is going to look like. And they keep saying, well, if these people who voted for this candidate vote for this one, then... But one of the things that I keep pointing out to people is if you take all the people who voted for Bob McCarthy, give them the Dominic, and then take all of the Steve Dibble and the Stacia Kraft votes and give them to Neil, it's practically a 50-50 split down the middle. Dominic wins 51-49. Mm-hmm. So it's anybody's race. It all really depends on who handles the debate well, who talks to the press well, and who gets the vote out most.
I wonder if we'll hear any ads on sports betting for these two races in Beverly and Salem, because that's all it's, you know, does that go into the Massachusetts sport betting thing now?
I don't know. Do they have an ad with Gronk yet?
What's that?
Do they have an ad with Gronk yet?
Yeah, it's almost like winning or something or other. Oh, my goodness. Before we get back to Paul, Dustin, tell me a little bit about some more money. I read that the city is getting, somebody's getting $1 million in the city on a state grant.
Yeah, so this is a really big deal, and it's kind of a bigger deal in Salem than it is throughout the rest of Essex County, though really it's targeting all of Essex County. Basically, there was an announcement at the House of Seven Gables yesterday that the state's Office of Travel and Tourism is dishing out $1 million for off-season, well, they call it slow season kind of marketing, so from November to April, trying to get people to look at the North Shore, everything from the Merrimack Valley down to North Shore. And trying to get people to come out to what is really kind of the dead period in this area. Salem tends to see the most aggressive dichotomy in that, where, you know, they are absolutely hot during the summer, and then it's absolutely cold during February. But even this past year is kind of busy. But there's been a lot of chatter around Salem to try to get more people to come in February and March as opposed to September and October. And these dollars, about $500,000 a year for the next 2 years, are really going to try to drive that message home, to get people to not come during the peak, but to come instead during the off-season.
Okay. Paul, I want to ask you an off-the-cuff question here related to that. You know, Gloucester, the population in Gloucester swells in the summertime. I'm sure it does in Newburyport, and it does in Salem. Is Beverly a tourist community at all?
Not so much. Certainly not nearly to the extent that Salem is. I think sometimes there's a sort of a, you know, there's a spillover mm-hmm. effect, especially in, you know, during October and, you know, the Halloween season. And there aren't a lot of, you know, places to stay in Beverly, you know, hotels and so forth. You know, so it's that, yeah. And Beverly's talked about that over the years, whether they should try to do more with the history and so forth. Hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't say it's much of a tourist destination.
All right, let's get back to Beverly here for a second. Connection to the MBTA, which has gotten a lot of headlines for all the wrong reasons, and I'm beginning to think it's one of the blights on the American transportation, public transportation publicity, because, you know, they tell you take public transportation, and yet it's so unreliable. And there's a story out of Beverly that's related to that.
Yeah, at 2:30 in the morning on Wednesday, FBI agents showed up at the home of John Pigsley, who lives on Rezzo Road in Beverly. It's in Beverly Farms, and they arrested him, and he went to court, and they charged him with, you know, 17 counts of, you know, wire fraud and tax evasion and other things. So basically, he worked for Keolis, which is the company that the MBTA pays to run the commuter rail system, and he was conspiring with a friend of his to basically steal equipment and money, you know, from Keolis, which ultimately impacts the MBTA. For more than $8 million. So they would do these, they're accused of, you know, creating these false invoices and, you know, ordering all kinds of equipment and, trucks and bobcats and so forth. And, I'm just looking at my story here. He ordered, you know, $20,000 in countertops and, tile and $10,000 in window treatments that he used, this, you know, Pigsley used on his own home. Mm-hmm. These are what the accusations are by, you know, prosecutors. So anyway, obviously it's a big story because, well, what, you know, what kind of oversight was there in this, and how could he get away with all this? He he kept the invoices under this $5,000 threshold, which would have triggered, you know, more scrutiny on the part of the company. But still, over the course of about 8 years, he and his accomplice here got away with, you know, allegedly stealing $8 million in equipment and cash from, you know, Keolis and the MBTA.
I wonder how much of the iceberg is still to be uncovered with the MBTA's, you know, new general manager. I mean, this is just crazy. You know, there's all kinds of offshoots like this all the time. And even this morning, the Gloucester to Boston commuter rail that goes through Beverly and Salem, they were stuck again this morning. And it's just it just goes on and on and on. Anecdotally, Paul, do you hear throughout the city or among your travels, I don't know, how do people get to Boston?
Yeah, that is a good question. Well, I mean, I think from, you know, the people I know that take the train into Boston on a regular basis, I mean, there definitely are problems, but it's still, you know, pretty much the best way to go in Beverly. I mean, there's a train station right in Beverly, and, you know, as there are in, you know, as there are in a few of our communities, so it's pretty convenient that way. Beverly actually has like three train stations, you know, so.
Right.
But no, I mean, yeah, it's the same problem that people are having everywhere. And, you know, as you said, a case like this just sort of adds to their problems, and it makes you wonder how the whole thing is being run.
Well, we just spent, my daughter spent the last 5 years in Philadelphia, and their transit system is amazing and reliable. The Southeast Pennsylvania Transit Authority, SEPTA, and it just makes me want to, you know, scream when you try to get, you know, people to commute here and get off the roads. But anyway, that's a story for another day. I want to go back to Salem here. Dustin, a story on, I know you, is it a pot shop coming up here now, another one?
Yeah, so, and this is kind of a remarkable story in Salem because this has been kind of building for several years now. So Salem was one of the first communities in the state to embrace recreational marijuana. They kind of realized that a lot of players were going to be coming to Salem to try to open up a spot. So they kind of launched zoning really quickly, kind of before most other communities, to basically say, okay, we know they're going to come here. Let's see if we can kind of run everything to our terms. They ended up issuing a license immediately to the medical dispensary that was in the city at the time. And then they basically fielded 8 applications, settled on 4 different businesses, and so far only 2 of those 4 have actually opened. There are 2 that still haven't opened yet. They're kind of run by small players. They're not bankrolled like some of the other national names are and things like that. And one of those 2 places, Starboard, started as Whit City Gardens over on Jefferson Avenue by the hospital. And in fact, back then when it was over there, I don't even think that that was the entrance to the hospital. I think that they've since moved the entrance to the hospital since Whit City Gardens was looking at the spot. Hmm. Now they're known as Starbird. Now they're at the end of Bridge Street next to Bill and Bob's and the Doggy Daycare and the, I think it's the Redmond Park there. So this has been kind of, they've been waiting for more than 4 years now. They were the kind of, they were the 3rd ones to get a deal, and now they're going to be the 4th ones to open just basically 4 years later. So the name has changed to kind of be kind of like a phoenix kind of rising kind of an image. And they're kind of, you know, the husband and wife pair that have been kind of behind the name, and now it's only being run by the wife, who's joined by her aunt, so that they can say it's an entirely women-owned operation. They still don't know officially when they're going to open yet, because they're hoping to get on the Cannabis Commission's the Cannabis Control Commission's agenda for the next meeting next week, and they are thinking that they may not make it, and if they don't, then they'll be waiting until May. And when I went and asked Tim Haig, one of the people who were kind of responsible for kind of launching this 4 years ago about that, he was like, well, it's only 30 more days, and in the grand scheme of things, that's really not that much. So people have just been kind of waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and their day is finally arriving.
Yeah. When I saw the name Tim Haig, I said, you know, I wonder if you'd pronounce that Tim High. That would be so appropriate for, but I guess it's pronounced Haig.
Yeah, it's Haig. And Tim's a good dude. He runs a couple of other businesses in the Salem, along with Elizabeth Childs and a couple of other people in Salem. He's been involved with Bambolina, Kakeshi, couple other things that are supposed to be secret and kind of, you know, it's speakeasy stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
they're connected to a couple good things there.
Okay. Hopefully, in a couple of weeks, I'll have my Zoom cast back up and running. It's not cooperating today, but I want to thank you both for doing the audio bit. And before I let you go, Paul, anything else you'd like to mention about upcoming stuff or stuff in the past at the Salem News?
Well, I would like to mention this is a big day at the Salem News for us because it's the last day of for Julie Manganis
here, and
a great reporter for us for years. She's sitting right behind me right now, and so anyway, I just want to acknowledge that Julie's covered courts for years, like nobody has ever covered courts, and probably nobody ever will. So yeah, we're just saying goodbye to her, and we're really going to miss her, and just wanted to let people know what a great job she's done.
Yes, absolutely, and you know, her writing has been spectacular, and it's a sad day when we lose guys or ladies. Oh, I'm not supposed to use people, professionals like that. Please give her Bill and our best. We've quoted her many, many times, and she's been spectacular. So thank you for that. And Dustin, anything you'd like to close out with?
No, it's to echo the same remarks from Paul. I mean, Julie's an institution on the North Shore. The courts move through her, and it's been a privilege to see kind of her mastery of the court system and the ability to stay on top of cases that I have difficulty keeping track of agendas. I can't imagine the volume to which that she does it.
Fantastic.
So it's
definitely
going to be a massive, never mind she was a massive pair of boots that we're going to have to fill here.
Yeah. All right. Agreed. And thank you both for that so much. All right, guys. I appreciate it. Be well. And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Thank you, Rick.
Okay. Thank you, man. All right. That is Dustin Luca and Paul Layton of the Salem News. This is MSO News Sports, and I'm Rick Moore.